Reality shows of various sorts seem to be all the rage these days, don't they? And judging by the large numbers of shows that exist and the increasing number of TV channels that carry them, if anything, they seem to be picking up steam. Some are pitched in more of contest-type formats, such as with Survivor. You know, when Survivor first came out, I was interested, based solely on the title. Then, when I found out that it was basically one big high school popularity contest, set against a wild background, my interest completely dissipated. Silly me, I thought they were actually going to have to survive, with the fittest and smartest, not the most popular, being the last one standing. Other shows are more scientific in nature and therefore, in my opinion, have more actual value. For example, my wife is a fan of the show Mythbusters, and both of us occasionally enjoy watching how it's made. Another science-based reality show that perhaps many of you have seen is River Monsters on the Animal Planet channel. River Monsters has been on for a number of years now and follows author and fishing enthusiast Jeremy Wade around the globe as he searches for large, unique, sometimes mythical fish. I don't watch the show a lot, but the few episodes I have seen have been decent, if a bit over-dramatized. So, why the mention of river monsters? Well, I believe we've got a couple of very solid river monster candidates of our own. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Some of you will probably jump to the conclusion that maybe I'm referring to the time of year and the fact kings are in. I can understand why you might think that. But no, I'm not referring to area kings. No disrespect to Bristol Bay's king population, but if someone was going to chase after kings with the idea of labeling them river monsters, those on the Kenai would be a much better bet to embody that term. No, in my mind, to be considered for monster status, you have to be both big and somewhat unusual. I'm not sure how Mr. Wade decides a fish to be worthy of that designation, but I'm going to toss out two for you to consider today. Two species that might not be terribly common, but neither are they unknown to the waters of southwest Alaska. The two fish I have in mind are the salmon shark and the sturgeon. Let's start off with the more known commodity of the two, the salmon shark. I say more known because these sharks are actually fairly common to the coastal waters of Alaska, including the waters of Bristol Bay. While they are related to great whites, probably nobody mentally cues up the theme song for Jaws when they consider salmon sharks, if they consider them at all. Salmon sharks are a medium-sized species of shark common to the North Pacific. They are found on both sides of the Pacific, and as far north on our side of the ocean as the Bering Sea, and as far south as Baja California. They are most common in continental offshore waters, ranging from the surface down to about 500 feet or so. While not quite as common around our area, they are out there. A story comes to mind about a Quinnahawk fisherman, Adolph Pleasant, who caught one close to that community a few years back. Salmon sharks are migratory, with migrations dependent in large part on the availability of prey species. They can migrate as individuals or in groups of up to 40, and their movements, as you might guess, often follow schools of fish, particularly salmon. Alaska's coastal waters, especially those of the Gulf of Alaska and south along the Panhandle, are prime locations. So what does a salmon shark look like? Well, they're a darker gray above and on the sides, with white undersides and a distinct line between the two. That line is somewhat wavy, with a larger splash of white just above the pectoral fins. They do have a few unique traits that are easily seen. They have a double-keeled tail, which is unusual among sharks. Also, they have a small secondary dorsal fin that's directly opposite of a small anal fin of the same size. To my eye, in the photos I've seen, they sometimes appear to have a head that's a bit large in comparison to the body. Also, their teeth are long and narrow, and they have long gill slits. I said medium-sized. To put that to some numbers, salmon sharks can grow to over 10 feet in length, but the average is often somewhere between 5 and 8 feet. They can sometimes exceed 600 pounds or so, but a couple of hundred under that is far more common. Salmon sharks mature at anywhere from 5 years to a decade, with females taking longer. They breed in late summer. Gestation is about 9 months, and the female gives birth to live young. Up to 5 pups are born, and they are on their own from the word go, independent and fending for themselves from day one. Populations around the North Pacific appear to be stable, and around some areas of the state, they're a target for sport fishermen. As their name would suggest, they do feed on salmon. However, the menu does not stop there, and other prey species targeted include squid, herring, pollock, and other types of fish. They also make use of other opportunities as presented, and have been known to eat sea otters and different types of seabirds. The fact that their name singles out their preference for salmon does have strong basis, though, as some studies have shown that they can consume as much as 25% of a total annual salmon run in some parts of their range. They like to attack from below, and they can be quite fast. Individual salmon sharks have been clocked by reliable sources, swimming at speeds in excess of 50 miles per hour. Shifting gears, let's talk about sturgeon. In fact, Jeremy Wade did have an episode a few seasons back where he looked into the legend of water-based monsters in both Lake Clark and Lake Iliamna. The legend of the Lake Iliamna monster, dubbed Illy by some, has been around for some time. On his show, Wade didn't catch anything to match some of the descriptions that have surfaced, pun intended, over the years, but he did offer up the opinion that the mystery fish could well turn out to be a sturgeon. Specifically, he thinks that Illy might be a white sturgeon. My boss, who just happens to have a fisheries degree and background, has heard some folks suggest instead that it might be a green sturgeon. I'll touch on differences in a moment, but let's first concentrate on what a sturgeon looks like. There are 26 species of sturgeon worldwide, and they all bear a pretty fair general resemblance to one another, and an appearance that's quite different from other types of fish. I think it's safe to say that if you see a sturgeon and recognize it as one, you'll never confuse it with another type of fish. Sturgeons are long, fairly narrow fish that have a wedge-shaped snout. They do not have scales, but rather are covered by skin and, across portions of their body, bony plates called scutes. They have 4 distinct barbels that dangle from their mouths, which are toothless. Barbels are those whisker-like tactile organs I grew up seeing on carp and catfish. Sturgeons can range in color from pale blues to silver whites to browns to greens, depending on the specific species. In trying to describe what a sturgeon looks like, perhaps the best advice I could give to you is to Google an image or two and see for yourself. One thing all sturgeons are, well, most of them anyway, is large. From just relatively large to other species in an area to flat out big. How big? Some species exceed 10 feet in length and 1,000 pounds in weight. Combined with the fact that they can live to over 100 years, and it's easy to understand why sturgeons have a reputation as both the Leviathans and Methuselahs of the freshwater fish world. Sturgeons are largely bottom feeders. With their jutting wedge-shaped snouts, they stir up muck on the bottom and then use their barbels to detect food sources, including mollusks, crustaceans, and small fish. I mentioned that they're toothless, so they're unable to seize prey and have to take things in whole. That said, due to the large size of some species, those species are able to eat fairly large prey items, including whole salmon. So it's not hard to see that some sturgeons grow large enough to be considered as monsters, which would lend credibility to the idea that Illy could be a sturgeon. Again, I'd urge you to Google a few images to solidify that notion. I, for one, have no trouble with it. My boss says green sturgeon. Jeremy Wade thinks maybe white sturgeon. Let me tell you why each would be easy enough to believe. Wade thinks white for the following reasons. White sturgeons are the largest freshwater fish in North America, and historical records suggest that they are capable of reaching 20 feet in length and over 1,500 pounds, though the all-tackle record is well short of those numbers. Still, a sturgeon approaching 20 feet would qualify as a monster in nearly anyone's book. Also, several accounts through the years of sightings of Illy match the colors of a white sturgeon. In defense of a green sturgeon, we have the following facts. There has been no recorded instances of a white sturgeon on this side of the Aleutian Range, though they are found in other parts of the state. On the other hand, there have been a handful of instances of green sturgeon being caught between the Naknek River and the Kuskokwim Delta. It is worth mentioning, in the case of a Lake Iliamna monster, that nothing's been caught or proven. It's all speculation at this point. Heck, one biologist is on record with saying he thinks it's not a sturgeon at all, but a fish called a sleeper shark. But that's a different species for another day. Just remember as you're out and about on the water this summer that, yes, there's salmon and other less threatening, more common fish. But in some places across the Bristol Bay region, you might keep in mind that old sailor's map designation of yesteryear. Here, there be monsters. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.